had a dream last night, one of those pandemic stress dreams. It was such a relief to be in a room with so many people, closely packed. And I awoke feeling nostalgic and sad and worried. Mostly, I felt transported for a moment, as only dreams can do. This is Earlids Liminal Sounds, an annual open call program. And the way I organize it is I disperse a kind of wishful listening through the air, such that maybe a loop of curator-artist circles around. Then I select works that are redolent of the theme, and this year it's all about dreams. Shh. I'm Joan Schumann. Shh.
The Underworld Whisper.
The Jungian psychologist James Hillman suggests dreams are material. They're not ephemeral. And now, in a world turned upside down, nightmarish, maybe, to say I had a dream might be more accurately flipped around to the dream had me. So I'm borrowing that Hillman insight for the title of this year's Liminal Sounds at Earlid. That was a piece called Right Now, Sometimes, and it was composed by the duo Ubu Kung. They make experimental noise and film artworks. One part of the duo is from the UK and the other is from the Philippines. Their piece is a response to the Pre-Raphaelite art series of Briar Rose paintings that depict the state between sleep and wakefulness. Right Now, Sometimes has an oddly similar title to that of American radio artist Adrienne Lilly's piece. She calls her work Once Again Inside, and maybe it's that each of these pieces attempts to mire the listener deep, deep inside the dream.
Thank you.
Adrienne Lilly says that in some ways she's blessed with a peculiar curse of being a frequent lucid dreamer. She says, I'm left in a blackness of sounds and sensations, trying not to panic. This next piece is called Under, and it's aptly titled as it dips us beneath the water's edge. It includes a dream song and cut-ups from the dream journals of another creative duo, Blanc Skjold.
Mm-hmm. Into this shop full of curiosities and crystals. They all had meanings, and people were really searching for these trinkets. There is lunch. There is a holiday. There is a hotel. They try to get it from me and get hold of it. There's a struggle, and I hold them. As I hold them, I pass the cup to someone else. There is my studio. There is Francesca and Sam. There is a piece of grass.
When I hear this piece, the mingling of voice and distant singing, my ear is just dragged right to the edge, begging me to stay inside the dream. Finishing up the set is a piece by American radio scholar and field recordist Neil Verma. He is taking a deep dive into dream studies by none other than Sigmund Freud.
In 1898, Sigmund Freud had a dream. It took place in a castle by the sea. I'm going to start that over again. In 1898, Sigmund Freud had a dream. It took place in a castle by the sea. But then, all of a sudden, it was only a narrow canal leading to the sea. In the dream, Freud was a naval officer. He stood beside the governor in a big salon behind the battlements of the castle. It was a time of war, and both men were afraid. Were there warships coming? The governor said he intended to go away and gave instructions about what to do in case of attack. His sick wife was in the castle with her children. If the bombs came, Freud was to order the evacuation of the big hall. The governor breathed heavily and turned to go. Freud stopped him. "How will I reach you with news after you go?" The governor began to speak, but then his head sank down. He died on the spot. The governor's death made no impression on Freud. He wondered if the widow would stay in the castle. He wondered if he should announce the death to the high command. He wondered if he ought to take over the defense of the castle himself. In the dream, Freud was standing at the window inspecting merchant ships rushing past the dark water with decks chock full of various wares. Then his brother was there, looking out onto the canal. One ship frightened them. Was it a warship? No, just another merchant vessel. Finally, there came a strange ship, a little ship. It looked like it had been cut off at the widest part of the hull. On its deck, there were a number of peculiar cups and boxes. Freud and his brother cried out in one voice, "It's the breakfast ship!"
Neil Verma has a vantage from the shore in The Breakfast Ship. And I think that vantage means you rely on the many passes the dream took from Freud's consciousness to our own ears that allows for a kind of snapshot interpretation. Shh. This is Joan Schumann, and this is Earlids, The Dream Had Me. Shh. Shh.
The Underworld Whisper.
I remember I was jumping onto the back of the truck, peering into dozens of these gray metal pails, these buckets filled with some kind of animal. Someone was passing around slices of thick, crusty bread, and what it was meant to do was to slather your skin onto the bread. You looked up at me as if to beg for safety within this inevitable doom.
Shh.
For years, I kept dream journals that noted down dreams like this, that seemed to proliferate with animals, often hybrid creatures. This next set of audio artistry circles around such dreamed animals, offering maybe a scent or a feeling or a visual to consider in sound. Diana Chester has put together a project called Jungle Dreamscape. You're about to hear an excerpt of it. It was a collaboration installed at Sydney's Royal Botanic Gardens. She worked in the sounds, and a ceramicist built this world of totems and birds. Both constructions were inspired by a whimsical painting by Henri Rousseau. And following Chester's piece is Berlin radio artist Gabi Schaffner, who says, her work called The Lion Dreams of Hunting was inspired by a picture description, of a 19th century painting of Saint Jerome and his lion sharing a nap together.
For dinner. In the high and far off times, the elephant, O best beloved, had no trunk. He had only a blackish, bulgy nose as big as a boot that he could wriggle about from side to side, but he couldn't pick up things with it. But there was one elephant, a new elephant. That for, said the bicolored python rock snake. The elephant's child sat there for 3 days waiting for his nose to shrink, but it never grew any shorter. At the end of the third day, a fly came and stung him on the shoulder. And before he knew what he was doing, he lifted up his trunk and hit that fly dead with the end of it. Vantage number one, said the bicolored python rock snake. You couldn't have done that with a mere schmear nose.
The lion dreams of hunting.
The lion dreams. The lion dreams of hunting.
And the sound of torn flesh flatters his ears. Also,
in his dream world,
he does not dream of God.
Blood flows.
Nor the angels.
No.
He dreams of being young again.
And the sound of torn flesh flatters his ears.
When both awaken,
Hieronymus.
They'll find the space around. When both awaken, there's poorly lit staircase. Poorly lit staircase. Hieronymus.
He dreams of being young again.
In his dream world,
they'll find the space around is a poorly lit staircase.
Torn flesh. And the sound. Hieronymus.
Angels.
He does not dream of God.
Nor the angels.
He dreams of being young again.
Blood flows. When both awaken,
they'll find the space around
is a poorly lit staircase. No.
When both awaken,
no.
They'll find the space around hunting.
Angels.
Also,
hunting.
The lion dreams
in his dream world.
The angels. And the sound of torn flesh flatters his ears. He does not dream of God.
Hunting.
Staircase. Hieronymus.
The angels.
Hieronymus. No.
And the sound of torn flesh.
Also.
And the sound of torn flesh flatters his ears.
He dreams. Dreams of hunting.
He does not dream of God, nor the angels. No.
He does not dream of God, nor the angels.
There's poorly lit staircase.
The lion dreams of hunting.
In his dream world.
Blood flows.
The lion dreams of hunting.
No. Young again. No. The lion.
In his dream world.
Nor the angels.
In his dream world.
When both awaken.
Born flesh.
Young again.
Again.
The angels.
I think that both these works dive into the engine of narrative. The motor of fiction is storytelling. And as readers, we perch on the edge of plot, but as dreamers, we kind of kill off our protagonists unceremoniously at times. I gathered dream recordings for an ongoing project called Wool Gathering, and when I received other people's recordings, I began to hear scenes like dream telling itself. Here's a scene that's part of this longer work, which meanders around catastrophe and the contradictory disasters of the dreamscape. After Wool Gathering, you'll hear a piece by Berlin-based radio artist Sarah Washington. She calls it Deer at the Door, and it has a similar kind of incredulous tone. I think it's that the dream it was made from was so far-fetched to the dreamer herself that it just comes across as something unbelievable.
It was so beautiful. Everything was so beautiful. There was this other butterscotch-colored horse that wasn't getting along with the other wild horses, but that's okay. But anyways, everything was just so stunning and so beautiful. I kept trying to capture it on my Instagram. It's funny that my Instagram is into my dreams a lot now. But as we were galloping, we passed a black bear. Really big black bear. And it started running after us. And I was like, Mom, I hope you know what you're doing. Like, I think this bear is gonna be too fast. Horses can't run really fast around curves. And this bear was just so big. And so we came across this outhouse that we all decided to, like, go into to, like, hide in. And my mom was like, don't worry, Prince will be okay. You know, he'll be able to run and everything. But just, we need to make sure that we're okay. And so we went into this outhouse. And this, like, giant anaconda came out, too. And so the bear and this anaconda were just, like, circling this outhouse. And everything was still really, really beautiful. And the snake, like, came really close around me. And I don't know, we were all just, like, really still. Really, really, really still. And I was thinking in my brain, don't let them smell your fear. Don't let them smell your fear. And they were doing this, like, mating dance that was so beautiful. Where they were looking deep into each other's eyes and then circling one another and gay galloping and oh, it was so beautiful. And I was so happy for him. I wonder if he's dead now.
Stepping out into the morning snow.
Stepping out into the morning snow.
In March.
Snow in March.
Everything was
late
white.
Snow that was starting to melt.
But it was starting to go.
The going snow.
Then I saw
in the going snow
footprints.
Footprints
in the driveway
were leading into the driveway.
Footprints.
Footprints
of an animal.
Large and hoof.
A large animal.
What could they be?
Cloven
hooves, very large,
probably a deer.
Must be a deer.
They could only really belong to a deer.
I don't see what else it could be.
Quite a big deer.
But why would there be a deer here, in this street?
Never seen a deer in the street.
We're close to the vineyards. You see the wild boar. You hear them at the back of the house and at the end of the houses, a few doors away. Tried to trace the footsteps of the deer. There wasn't enough snow left on the road, so we checked the paths between the houses and looked around the end. There were no more footprints to be seen. You see where the deer had been. A deer in the drive and a deer in the dream.
The details of a remembered dream upon awakening or a whiff of it later in the day arrive with such clarity. Listen, and also questions. Index finger to lips. There were trains coming and going, all white and sleek. Then I see a younger version of myself. I'm looking down at a phone, which seems odd, because when I was young, I wouldn't have had a phone. And yet this person knows to get on the other train, the one called Black Swan, despite it being shiny and white. Years later, I understood what a black swan was, despite the fact that I didn't know what it was when I dreamt it. And it has these connotations of surprise or benefit of hindsight or a singular event. That was Tino Collins' miniature called Mind the Gap, in which residue sound arouses distant memories. Colin built a reverie out of the dust and static noise on his vinyl collection from the 80s up through the early 90s. We spend considerable time inside these tiny nighttime dramas. There's often a vivid rush of memories by day. We think of travel and film, both as linear experiences, like those trains in my dream or Colin's LP collection. Recollection, even with documentation, comes in blips. But the dream world is a metonymic transit. This last set of pieces resonates around these truncated blips. Each of these artists have pulled sound from their own recording archives. For example, London-based sound artist Lou Barnell found her old Olympus dictaphone containing the contents of her 19-year-old brain as she traveled the world. Along these sounded gaps of memory are the mini-disc recordings that New York-based sound artist John Roach has dug up circa 1999 through to about 2007. The process of listening, Roach says, was like a waking dream.
Thank you. Big wooden door, opening and closing, close up. Opening. Another door. It's smaller. Opening. Closing. Thank you. fire, push fire, exit, open.
This will be FX40, take one, conservatory door.
Copy.
Open and close, badminton.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's C, right? One on the C and three, right? One, three, one, four, one, five.
Okay.
Right? And one, three.
That is a wild effect of this left quarter's doors open close.
Echoey type door open and close. Door closed first. And open.
All right, open and close door for Makutsi's when she gets in. Open, close.
Action.
That was called You're Gonna Be Ready to Burn It As Soon As You Tape It. And you might have heard voice IDs peppering the piece. They were captured by film sound recordist
The Underworld Whisper.
Something we'd normally not hear. More gaps, more blips, more eviscerated memory. We have no ear lids. We leave off with Jeff Gaburek's piece called Going, another kind of reverie, or rather we jump into the fray along transit lines as a dreamscape related to travel.
Thank you.
world.
And through that, you know,
soft, or it
for more detail and links to any of the artists you heard in Earlid's Liminal Sounds, visit earlid.org.